is here, chapter 11 in the Perfect Society, Four Social Classes. So then Narad Muni comes and visits Yudhishthira Maharaj. So Sukadeva Goswami continued, after hearing about the activities and character of Prahlad Maharaj, which are adorned and discussed amongst great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Yudhishthira Maharaj, the most respected king amongst exalted personalities, again inquired from the great Saint Narad Muni in a mood of great pleasure. Yudhishthira Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society and the system of social and spiritual advancement known as Varnashram Dharma." So Prabhupada then points out here, Sanatana Dharma means devotional service. It says the word Sanatana refers to that which is eternal. Sanatana Dharma means devotional service, which does not refer. The word Sanatana refers to that which is eternal, which does not change but continues in all circumstances. We have several times explained what the eternal occupational duty of the living being is. Indeed, it has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Surup Hoy Krishna Nityadas. The real occupational duty of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if one prefers to deviate from this principle, he remains a servant because that is his eternal position. But one serves Maya, the illusory material energy. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is an attempt to guide human society to serving the personality of Godhead instead of serving the material world, with no real profit. Our actual experience is that every man, animal, bird, and beast, indeed every living entity, is engaged in rendering service. Even though one's body or one's superficial religion may change, every living entity is always engaged in the service of someone. Therefore, the mentality of service is called the eternal occupational duty. This eternal occupational duty can be organized through the institution of Varnashrama, in which there are four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and four Ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Thus, Yudhishthira Maharaj inquired from Narad Muni about the principles of Sanatana Dharma for the benefit of human society. So we see here is that Sanatana Dharma, Prabhupada is saying, devotional service. So that which is done for Krishna, that which is eternal, that's devotional service. That's Sanatana. And then we see here that can be organized, this eternal occupation can be organized to the institution of Varnashram. Means we're going to serve Krishna. The eternal principle is we are serving Krishna, and we're always doing that. So this now can be organized through Varnashram. Means that we're going to serve Krishna, but we can serve in the capacity of a brahmachari, in the capacity of a grihastha, as a vanaprastha sannyas, or brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. In any case, we're always serving. That's the point, is that service must always be done. So this service then becomes organized into these. So we see that the Varnashram Dharma is the natural organizational system for organizing those who are in devotional service. It's very natural because it's come from Krishna. Service is from Krishna, service is about Krishna, and the Varnashram is how to organize things around Krishna. Right? We see here. It means in the beginning we may think that Sanatana Dharma and Prabhupada's throwing out the whole idea, but we see that at the end then he mentions that this eternal occupational duty can be organized through the institution of Varnashram. Right? And he says, thus, Yudhishthira inquired from Narad Muni about the principles of Sanatana Dharma for the benefit of human society. So here he said, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society and the system of social and spiritual advancement known as Varnashram. In other words, the Varnashram that is engaged in the Lord's service, that's what we want to hear. That is Sanatana Dharma. Right? If it's not engaged in Krishna's service, it becomes useless. Right? This is the whole dilemma in the Gita. Is Arjuna is discussing Varnashram, but he's discussing it not in relationship to Krishna. Right? He hasn't understood that Krishna wants to destroy all the demoniac forces. and he wants to do that through killing them. Right? Krishna is going to, when somebody becomes demoniac enough, then Krishna is going to kill him himself or through the agencies of his devotees. Right? He says the living entity gets on this path of demoniac behavior and they just become more and more and they never come out of it. So then Prabhupada mentions how they come out is that Krishna kills them. So that means either he himself personally or his devotees do that. So then here Krishna wants to kill all these demoniac personalities. And then he's going to do that through Arjuna and those devotees. Like this. So that will be done. So, but the problem was is he didn't see it in relationship to Krishna. Because in the beginning he's saying he doesn't want to fight because of Varnashram. Then he is fighting and doing the things that a Kshatriya should do, which is still Varnashram. But the difference is now he's doing it for Krishna when before he was not. This is the subtle point. So Varnashram engaged in Krishna's service becomes devotional service. Right? When it's done for Krishna. So that means, and our devotional service can be organized into these things. Otherwise, someone may complain that, well, this is lower levels of devotional service, this is sadhana, or this is aropya, which in which we engage our own ideas, our own nature. But the point is who is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform? If someone's on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, factually, then they can dispense with all these different rules and regulations for the body. But if they're not, if they still have some conditioned nature, that conditioned nature must be engaged in Krishna's service. Otherwise, this body belongs to Krishna, and the mind belongs to Krishna, and then we don't use it in Krishna's service? What's the meaning? What does that mean? Krishna has some, we have our, this body, but we're not going to engage it in Krishna's service. Right? So one may say, no, I'm engaged, but are we engaging every aspect? Right? Is every aspect being engaged in Krishna's service? So the point is that all these different obscure activities that we're doing have to be engaged in Krishna's service. And so the system of organizing that into a way in which we can see that everything is engaged is called Varnashram. Because the Varnashram and the sadhana, then this covers every aspect of our activities, every aspect. Whatever we can do. Otherwise, then, you know, what is the meaning? Is this understood? It means, if we have a conditioned nature, it has to be engaged. If we're not willing to follow Varnashram and say it's external, then we should. Our next sentence should be, because I'm on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, I don't need to follow it. But if we say, no, there's higher principles of devotional service, you know, hearing and chanting and very fine aspects of philosophy and the leelas of the Lord, that's okay, as long as all you do is hear that 24 hours a day. But if you're going to sleep, then what is going to be your system for engaging that sleep in Krishna's service? Right? How is that going to be engaged? How are we going to find, how do you engage your sleep in Krishna's service? Right? Are you going to get up in the morning and that's just it? Now if you're going to feel like brushing your teeth and taking a bath, how are you going to engage that in Krishna's service? You're going to go to the toilet, how are you going to engage that in Krishna's service? Where are you going to get it from? Or just listen to the pastimes? No, but if we're going to the toilet, then how are we listening to the pastimes unless we're discussing them and thinking of them when we go? Right? But the whole point is how that will be engaged. If you're conscious of it, then how it will be engaged. So that will be engaged because there are systems how to organize that. The systems how to deal with that. And that's the Varnashram system. So that's what Krishna is pointing out. But to take nicely three times bath and do so many different brahminical activities, if it's not done for Krishna, it's useless. But the point is Krishna has given the system of Varnashram for devotees to use in his service. So it's useless is when non-devotees don't use it in Krishna's service. Then it's useless. Right? Just like we have a chamara. Okay, let's take a chamara. Chamara is a tail of a Nepalese cow that lives up in the mountains. It's a big monstrous thing with tons of frizzy hair. Right? I mean, it's the chamara. That's what they look like. You can imagine a cow that's got tons of hair like that. You know, big, huge, fat cow with frizzy hair like that. Right? So we take the long hairs that are there, either from the tail or the chin or on the flanks, those where the big, long, you know, pieces are. And then we take all that and it's tied all together and put on a stick. Now, is this something transcendental or not? The hairs of the yak are automatically, you know, Satchitananda, just by seeing them, by touching them, remembering them, you know, waving them, then one automatically goes back to Godhead. Is it? No. It's material energy. But Krishna has arranged yak tails so that you can use them in fans in worshiping the deity. Right? So now, that's what they're for. So now if you take that and you worship Krishna with it, then that's called devotional service. It may be on the platform of Vaidhi, it may be on Aropya, it may be on, you know, some, you know, whatever it may be. But it's still Krishna's service. And now if I take that yak tail and then I fan, you know, for the demigods or some, you know, bogus guru or like this, then what is the service? So the fan is meant for Krishna's service, but we may not use it in Krishna's service. There's plenty of people that buy chamaras and don't use them in Krishna's service. Right? So in the same way, Varnashram is meant for Krishna's service. That's what it's for. It's the system of social organization for devotees. That's what it's for. But if we don't use it in Krishna's service, then what happens? Right? There's no benefit. It's useless. So that's the whole point. If we understand it from that side, then it becomes very, very easy.
Yeah,
Daivavanashram means it is used, and Asurak means it's not used. So that's all. But they follow the same rules. Yeah, just it's the same principle as everything, just that one you're using in Krishna's service and one you're not. And then therefore if you're using it very seriously in Krishna's service, means if you're using it in Krishna's service with a lot of material desire, that's prominent. Means you're a devotee, but the material benefits are foremost. And kind of like, you know, Krishna being prominent will be later. Then you would still follow all the same rules and regulations as those following the Asuric, you know, all those aspects. But if you are following it with the idea of Krishna being first, like that, and it's a way to engage all of your material, you know, necessities and identities and desire, needs, all that, then there are certain elements that are not so important, you know, like the things of the shrads and the Pancha Mahayagyas, all this, that's not so important. Because we replace that with the Shraddha is important because you must accept the system of, you know, the dynasty or the parampara. So for the materialist, he accepts, you know, his father is great, you know, so his grandfather is great, his grandfather is great, so therefore that Gotra is great. You know, because they come in that line, and then there's, you know, so in that way, then they must respect the forefathers. But when you come into spiritual life, that you actually understand that Krishna is the original father and all that, then the material gotra, that side, that's not so important anymore. So therefore, the shraddhas, all that, are not the thing, because Krishna is the forefather. He's the Pitamaha. He's, you know, there's not someone else who's the grandfather, right? He's the one. He's the father of Brahma, and Brahma is then the father of all living entities. So then, that's not so important. Then, it's not so important. So but in other words, Nadaiva, then you're going to the higher aspects of it, because you actually understand what's going on. And in the Asuric, you stick with the lower aspects because you don't know what's going on. But the principle of respecting the authority of the parampara, that is not going to be gotten around. Even the biggest demon who follows Varnashram will not circumvent that principle, though he'll do it in a very mundane way, through his own family and all that, the glory of that. And, you know, if he does have his guru like Sukracharya or that, then, you know, he has his respect of the guru in this way. But otherwise, those aspects are there. They can't be given up like that. Otherwise, we're not understanding. We came from somewhere, right? Like that. We have an origin. If we don't recognize that, then we're saying that we are the origin. So that is why these things are important. But one has to know the system. It means by chanting Hare Krishna, then even if one doesn't know the system, okay, it'll function. Things will go okay. But as long as you're very much absorbed just in the service and chanting and doing whatever you can. But as soon as then, you know, terminologies like, well, we have to be realistic and we have to take care of all the different aspects of the economics and all that, which is fine. But then at that point, then you are responsible. You are in the know. Like someone who's a small child, they do things wrong, no one minds. Because they're innocent. You know? But when they're adult, they're not. So when they do something wrong, it's different. It's different. So in the same way is that when one gets into one wants to interface with the material energy for profit and gain and need, then also then the responsibility that goes along with that has to be simultaneously accepted. Right? So just like on the smaller thing is that when one gets married, one accepts the responsibility of the family. But when one interfaces with the material energy, he has to accept that the material energy belongs to somebody and has to respect the system, the person who owns the material energy and controls the material energy, how they want things done. Like that. So then it becomes a very, very important aspect. Very important aspect. So we can't just say, if we say, well, we just chant Hare Krishna, we don't care. But then one has to show how that works. Or be so simple that he just chants Hare Krishna and just takes some prasad and Hari Bol does some service and that's all. Then we don't care if they don't know the technicalities. But as soon as that they're not doing that, but they're saying we have to be realistic, then yes, realistic means where did all this come from? You want money, but whose money is it? It's Krishna's money. How are you going to deal with this money? How are you going to get this money? How are you going to respect this money? How are you going to deal with the material energy to get this money? And since we're not the doer, then therefore only when you please Krishna you get the money. So therefore, how should I deal with the material energy that will please Krishna that I will get the money? And then once I get the money, since it is Krishna's money, how am I going to deal with it? That is reality. So we can't just have a half-baked reality. We say someone's too idealistic, but then we want to get down to actual reality. Reality is very tough. Reality is that this money is Krishna's, this body is Krishna's, this mind is Krishna's, this soul is Krishna's. Whatever you got and whatever you see is Krishna's. So what are you going to do that you engage that in Krishna's service? Right? How am I engaging in Krishna's service by wearing karmic clothes around my house all day because it's comfortable for me? What is the service? How I have engaged myself in Krishna's service. So my point is I want to be comfortable. So I've engaged all these things nicely in my service as comfort, but what is the service to Krishna? Right? Therefore, Krishna gives codes of dress. So you want to dress comfortably, but follow Krishna's dress code. And then be comfortable. Like that. So all these things have to be seen very realistically. Otherwise, then we see so much that just in the name of Krishna consciousness, so many things are said. You know, it's very easy just to say, we chant, we don't care for the rules. But who did we learn that from? We learned that from Prabhupada. And what is Prabhupada saying in this purport? What is Yudhishthira Maharaj asking? He's asking about Sanatana Dharma and the system of social organization to support that. That's what he's asking. He's a king. He's engaged in Krishna's service. He's a pure devotee. He's talking with Narad Muni. Narad Muni is talking about Varnashram. He thinks it's important enough. Yudhishthira thinks it's important enough. So if we don't think it's important enough, then that means we're greater paramahamsas than everybody involved in this whole process. Who's asking the question, who's answering the question, who's giving the commentary. But it has to be engaged in Krishna's service. Varnashram on its own is useless. Yes?
So it can only be disregarded if one is truly transcendent.
Yes. 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 That's the point. Means we have to be very careful. We say that we don't care for the rules out of laziness, because if we're willing to work very hard with the material nature to get money, you know, to pay our rent, to pay this and that, how is it that why do we we're following rules there? We chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules. Why do we care for, you know, paying our bills, or, you know, the wife wants a new sari, why do we have to do that? Or, you know, the kids are hungry, why do we have to feed them? Because we don't care for the rules, we chant. And we just sit down and chant all day. Right? So then that means we just sit down and chant all day. But if we say we don't care for the rules, it means I won't follow this particular Vedic rule, but, you know, I'll get in my car and drive on the proper side of the street. Not, we may say that's all practical. Yes, that's all practical with exactly what we see in the material energy. But behind what we see, there's Krishna. Why does the car go down the road? Because it's Krishna. The energy is coming from where? Right? The energy is coming from Krishna. Right? We may say, well, I'm making it go. Are we making it go? We didn't create the car. We didn't create the petrol. We didn't create the air. Right? We ourselves are 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. We can't move these hands and move the feet to push the pedals and push all the buttons. It's impossible. How 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, is going to move something, you know, billions of times bigger than it? Doesn't happen. Right? But because we desire, Krishna then sanctions and the material nature moves it. So material nature is driving us down the road and taking us there, and, you know, we're making all our deals and we're influencing people and we're making profit in our business or whatever our doings, and then we have our money. Like that. It's material nature is doing what Krishna sanctioned. So the whole point is you can't get around Krishna sanctioning and material nature doing it. So if one understands that's what's actually going on, then why not do it in line with Krishna? So one has to be conscious. And as we'll see as Prabhupada goes through here, that other religious systems can be used, non-Vedic. But there must be some system what we're working on. Right? So the point is realism has to be taken, you know, as far as possible. If we can't see that far, that's fine. But then we should be humble. If I can only see my nice shiny car, and I can't see how Krishna is actually making it run, then I should be humble. Because I'm not Pandita Samadarshina, you know. I see a BMW and it's nice. And I see, you know, a Volkswagen, it's not nice. So I'm not Pandita Samadarshina, so therefore I should deal on that platform. I shouldn't be proud and say too many things. You know? I should understand that I only see this much, I deal this much. Right? So the reality is I'm going to deal with the material actually how I must do. I must drive on the right side of the street. I must park in the right places because otherwise I'll get a ticket. I'll follow all these rules. But we also have to understand is that above this, there's the supreme rule giver. And if we follow his rules, then things are a lot more smoothly. So that's all. But it's simple stuff. It's Krishna's help giving us so many rules so that all these aspects we can actually serve him. But if we can't see the service, then of course, then they become dry rules. So then text. What happened to text? Oh, I see. Okay, we read that. O best of the Brahmanas, you are directly the son of Prajapati, Lord Brahma. Because of your austerities, mystic yoga, and trance, you are considered the best of all of Lord Brahma's sons. No one is superior to you in peaceful life and mercy, and no one knows better than you how to execute devotional service, or how to become the best of the brahmanas. Therefore you know all the principles of confidential religious life, and no one knows them better than you. Purport. Yudhishthir Maharaj knew that Narad Muni is the supreme spiritual master of human society, who can teach the path of spiritual liberation, leading to the understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, it is for this purpose that Narad Muni compiled his Bhakti Sutra and gave directions in the Narada Pancharatra. To learn about religious principles and the perfection of life, one must take instruction from the disciplic succession of Narad Muni. Our Krishna consciousness movement is directly in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya. Narad Muni received instructions from Lord Brahma, and in turn transmitted the instructions to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva instructed his son Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Because Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, and Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna, there is no difference between them. If we strictly follow the principle of disciplic succession, we are certainly on the right path of spiritual liberation or eternal engagement in devotional service. So then these aspects of religion, confidential religious life, Narad Muni has written in the Bhakti Sutras and the Narada Pancharatra. So there's Bhakti Sutras, then they speak about devotional process, like the nectar of devotion. And the Pancharatra then gives the Pancharatric aspect. In other words, he's written on both the Bhagavat and the Pancharatric margs, like that, so that there's a complete, you see, there's a complete delineation of the philosophy, like that. Whatever we need is given. Text 5. Sri Narad Muni said, after first offering my obeisances unto Lord Krishna, the protector of the religious principles of all living entities, let me explain the principles of the eternal religious system, of which I have heard from the mouth of Narayana. Purport. The word Aja refers to Krishna, who explains in Bhagavad Gita 4:6, Ajopi san avyayatma, I am ever existing, and thus I never take birth. There is no change in my existence. Text 6. Lord Narayana, along with his partial manifestation, Nara, appeared in this world through the daughter of Daksha Maharaj, known as Murti. He was begotten by Dharma Maharaj for the benefit of all living entities. Even now he is still engaged in executing great austerities near the place known as Badarik Ashrama. That means Murti was married to Yamaraj and their kid was... Huh? And so one of them is Murti. And... But they're all with Dharmarajas. Oh, so in Dharmaraj, it's only Nara Narayan. Dattatreya. Oh, okay. Daksha is a proud grandfather. Text 7. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhishthir, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Purport. As stated by Yamaraj, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Yamaraj, the representative of the Lord, who takes care of the living beings after their death, gives this verdict to show us how and when the living entity will change his body. He is the authority, and he says that the religious principles consist of the codes and laws given by God. Here's the point. Religious principles. See, religion, varnashram, and basically all the aspects of engaging the body and mind in Krishna's service according to the rules and regulations, they are all synonymous. They all mean the same thing. So religious principles here means the the codes and laws given by God means the Varnashram. No one can manufacture religion, and therefore manufactured religious systems are rejected by the followers of the Vedic principles. In Bhagavad Gita 15.15 it is said, Vedaischa saverd aham eva vedyaha. Vedic knowledge means to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, whether one speaks of the Vedas, scriptures, religion, or the principles of everyone's occupational duty, all of them must aim at understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.26 therefore concludes, Savaipumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje. Ahaituk yapatrihata yayatma supersedati. In other words, religious principles aim at learning how to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. That service must be unmotivated and unchecked by material conditions. Then human society will be happy in all respects. So these religious principles must be how to serve Krishna. See, is the topmost platform is based on the principles of prema, love. Because here it says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He Himself is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. So that's what we're trying to get to. But the point is as long as one's conditioned to the material nature, it's very hard to always be absorbed in that platform. One may miss the point. Right? One may manufacture one's own system of activities, one's own religious system. So, therefore, one follows that system to purify oneself. Do you come to the platform, you can become freed from the system. It's like taking out a thorn with a thorn. We're in the material world, engaging the material energy in our service. We want to get rid of it, this attachment to the material energy. Therefore, we take the same material energy and use it in Krishna's service. So you take the thorn out with the thorn, but once the thorn's out, you throw away the other thorn. So all the rules and regulations go when you come to the platform, you're freed of that. But before that, it's very useful. Very, very useful. And then once you're freed from it, then you go on to just Krishna, because Krishna himself is the essence of all Vedic knowledge and religious principles. He's the root of everything. So then, all your attention is on Krishna. Your loves for Krishna. Your practices are all being done for Krishna. And then you're very satisfied. Like that. One can be very satisfied. It says, then human society will be happy in all respects. Because whatever you're doing, then you're doing it in Krishna's service. Then you become very satisfied. Otherwise, not. The Smriti, the scriptures following the principles of Vedic knowledge, are considered evidence of Vedic principles. Right? So Krishna is evidence. Right? The Vedas are evidence. Whatever Krishna speaks is evidence. Now it's saying that the memory of the great sages means they have heard. Yeah, okay. There are 25 different types of scripture for following religious principles, and among them the scriptures of Manu and Yajnavalkya are considered to be all pervading authorities. Means they're always applicable. They always are used. Others they apply to certain situations, certain this and that. But what Manu and Yajnavalkya speak about, that is always applicable. That is always usable. In the Yajnavalkya Smriti, it is said, Shruti Smriti Sadachara Svasya Cha Priyam Atmana Samyak Sankalpaja Skamo Dharma Mulam Idam Smritam. One should learn human behavior from Shruti, the Vedas, and from Smriti, the scriptures following the Vedic principles. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina Ahaituki Harer Bhaktir Utpatayaiva Kalpate. The purport is that to become a devotee, one must follow the principles laid down in Shruti and Smriti. One must follow the codes of the Puranas and the Pancharatrika Vidhi. One cannot be a pure devotee without following the Shruti and Smriti. And the Shruti and Smriti without devotional service cannot lead one to the perfection of life. Therefore, from all the evidence, the conclusion is that without bhakti, devotional service, there is no question of religious principles. God is the central figure in the performance of religious principles. Almost everything going on in this world as as religion, is devoid of any idea of devotional service, and is therefore condemned by the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam. Without devotional service, so-called religious principles are only cheating. So, you can't, here is saying, you can't become a devotee unless you follow Shruti and Smriti. But following Shruti and Smriti without devotional service is useless. Does this make sense? We have to follow the Shruti and Smriti, but following it without devotional service is useless. This is the point. Right? So, it's just like in India, it's understood that following the Vedas, it's evidence. You follow evidence. You follow authority. So that will be done. But the problem is because of material motivation, one gets distracted and one gets into karma and jnana and yoga. So therefore, then it must be always said that no, the purpose of all this is Krishna. Therefore, following of the Vedic culture must be done to please Krishna. Then, here, then, these are the symptoms, these are the principles to be followed by all. It means now is the principles that must be followed. This is text 8 through 12. These are the general principles to be followed by all human beings. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, observing fasts on certain days of the month, Ekadasi, bathing twice a day, tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, control of the mind, control of the senses, nonviolence, celibacy, charity, reading of the scripture, simplicity, satisfaction, rendering service to saintly persons, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements, observing the futility of the unnecessary activities of human society, remaining silent and grave, and avoiding unnecessary talk, considering whether one is the body or the soul, distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals. Right? We're discussing about the Mahaprasad. Right? Two boys go and get it and eat it all, and the next day another two boys, they get to eat it all. Rather than two boys go and get it and then distribute it to everybody. Seeing every soul, especially in the human form, as part of the Supreme Lord, hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of the saintly persons, chanting about these activities and instructions, always remembering these activities and instructions, trying to render service, performing worship, offering obeisances, becoming a servant, becoming a friend, surrendering one's whole self. O King Yudhishthir, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is for everybody. The fun thing is that you see when the purport comes, is this is for everybody. Right? Then, on top of that, then you have the dvijas. Right? It means this is everybody, includes shudras, everybody should have these qualities. Then you have... purport. In order that human beings be distinct from animals, the great Saint Narad recommends that every human being is educated in terms of the above-mentioned 30 qualifications. Nowadays, there is propaganda everywhere, all over the world, for a secular state, a state interested only in mundane activities. But if the citizens of the state are not educated in the above-mentioned good qualities, how can there be happiness? For example, if the total populace is untruthful, how can the state be happy? Therefore, without consideration of one's belonging to a sectarian religion, whether Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, or any other sect, everyone should be taught to become truthful. Similarly, everyone should be taught to be merciful, and everyone should observe fasting on certain days of the month. Everyone should bathe twice a day, cleanse the teeth and body externally, and cleanse his mind internally by remembering the holy name of the Lord. The Lord is one, and whether one is Hindu, Muslim, or Christian. Therefore, one should chant the holy name of the Lord regardless of differences in linguistic pronunciation. Also, everyone should be taught to be very careful not to discharge semen unnecessarily. This is very important for all human beings. If semen is not discharged unnecessarily, one becomes extremely strong in memory, determination, activity, and the vitality of one's bodily energy. Everyone should also be taught to be simple in thought and feeling, and satisfied in body and mind. These are the general qualifications of a human being. There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. Unless one is educated in the above mentioned 30 qualities, there cannot be any peace. Ultimately, it is recommended. Shravanam kirtanam chasya smaranam mahatam gate sevaja vanatir dasyam sakyam atma samarpanam. Everyone should become a devotee of the Lord, because by becoming a devotee of the Lord, one automatically acquires the other qualities. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunais tatra samasate sura harav avhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratena sati dhavato bahi. In one who has unflinching faith, in one who has unflinching devotional service to Krishna, all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifest. However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications, because he is engaged by mental concoction in material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Our Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is all-embracing. Human civilization should take it very seriously and practice its principles for the peace of the world. So these qualities must be obtained. So the best way that it's mentioned here is by the devotional service. By devotional service, all these other things are automatically there. Because you are performing Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Sakyam, Archanam, Dasyam. Because you're doing Archanam, you're going to take bath twice a day. You're going to be truthful, austere. Sakyam means you're doing the Lord's service, preaching. You're going to be merciful. All these qualities that are there are automatically going to come. So when we say we chant Hare Krishna, that means that by chanting, we get the benefit of all these things. They automatically come. But as long as one has that full faith in devotional service and the devotional process, by following the devotional process, everything will be taken care of. All needs will be taken care of. Then, automatically, all these lower things are taken care of. They're minor. They're minor things. It's interesting how Prabhupada is even putting is that you follow some of these religious principles and follow it properly. You know, you have to do your fasting, you have to chant the Lord's name, you have to do all these different things. Then in whatever the religious process, that must be followed. But then all those qualities, means you want the human qualities, you must follow a religious system. Right? In other words, dharma must be followed, otherwise there's no human culture. So whether it's Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Vedic, like that. Then, these are easily gained by devotional service. By practicing devotional service, these are easily gained. So now, in devotional service, we follow the scriptures given by the acharyas, the path given by them. And in this path, then they delineate for us the different activities that as devotees we should perform. We should situate ourselves in some way in the social system, according to varnas and ashrams, and perform our devotional activities. So it comes like that. But the whole thrust is that devotional service must be there. Otherwise, we can get distracted by varnashram. We get caught up in the rules. We get distracted. Even we talk badly about smartas, and they're getting distracted, one, by the Vedic rules, but also by the rules of deity worship. Right? They're getting distracted by those rules. Point is any rules, even its managerial rules, even you take the best managerial books and you study them, you can still get distracted by them. Because the purpose of management is to please the Lord. So unless you're managing to please the Lord, then one may get distracted. One may be expert manager. But if one gets distracted, what's the use? One has to be careful. Is that make any sense? Yes.
You mentioned about
the end of his life, he doesn't have like a personal concept of God. He thinks of God as a big light. So at the end of his life, he told everybody he dies thinking of the person in front of Krishna. As he goes to the Dharmajyoti, or he goes to the next body that will be more exposed to the proper religious principle.
Generally like that. The point is in the other systems, one may come across some difficulties. That's the thing. There may be some difficulties there. Because all the aspects to pull in the senses and all these things sometimes it's very difficult to obtain. You know? Very, very. Because they don't put so much emphasis on the hearing chanting of the Lord's name. Like that. So then sometimes the essential point, then the potency is not as strong because of that. If they're always chanting the Lord's name, then definitely they'll be much more, it'll be much easier for them. But otherwise, they emphasize something else, you know, like that. Does that make any sense?
In an earlier verse, there was the explanation that we use the material energy to Krishna's service to get rid of our material desires and material energy. But how do we know that actually what we do it in Krishna's service? For such times, that can be very tricky. There's such a big scale of activities. And how do we know that this is the right that we have to do, everyone in his own position?
That's why we follow the directions given by the authorities, the previous authorities. You know, it says Krishna himself, he is the root of authority. He is Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, the Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles. So he himself is the root of everything. The Vedic knowledge is authority, and the memory of great authorities. Memory of great authorities means the smriti. So the authorities have heard the Vedas, shruti, and then they gain understanding from that by the Lord's grace, and then they write what's called the smritis. It's like Bhagavatam, it's the memory of Sukadeva Goswami. He's speaking all this from memory. You know, he's not sitting there next to a latest, you know, Pentium 3, 500 megahertz, you know, 20 gigabyte computer and pushing a few buttons with, you know, graphic presentation of all these different things and then telling the stories. This is coming from his memory. You know, and in this, then there's a realization. So the smriti means that it's been remembered by something. If you always look, there's always somebody speaking. The Manasamhita is Bhrigu speaking, that he remembers from hearing from Brahma, that Brahma remembered from hearing from Krishna. Narad Muni now is speaking what he has heard from Naranarayan. So the smriti means the memory of the great sages. So that is authority. Shruti is authority, and Krishna himself is authority. So we turn to them. And then it says the parampara. Prabhupada then points out, the next point he makes is that the parampara is there. So we're coming in that parampara from Narad Muni, the Brahma Sampradaya. So then that means whatever the authorities in that line tell, that's what we're going to take. We're not going to take more. Right? Prabhupada says follow the Vedic culture, but he says we don't bother with this with the Shraddhas. Right? He says that when you sweep and you drink water and you start fires and you grind spices and, you know, turn on your mixie and all this kind of stuff, you kill living entities. And you have to do something about that. But he says what we do is we chant Hare Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna, we serve the devotees, like that, we read the scriptures. So in this way we take care of all those things. It's already done. We're following the Vedic culture, but we have our way to do it. And that's given to us by our acharyas. So that's how we know, is that whatever we're doing, we have to see it's in line with what the acharyas have given us. Then it's there. So we have our way of doing things.
That means in our day-to-day life, in our own managed life, we just take whatever our authorities are saying, and that is in line with Krishna.
Our authorities means Krishna, what he is speaking in Bhagavad Gita, the authority of the devotees, what they from their memory, then the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion. Like that. We take these are our authorities. So what those say plus the devotees we associate with is there, but it must be in line with what the acharyas say. So at the temple authorities and that, their standing is that they're saying what Krishna is saying. Like that. That is their right of authority, is that they're speaking what Krishna has said, that has come down to us through the authorities. Like that. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. Hmm. Yes, it is. The catalyst on developing the qualities, one is, of course, it must be sincerity. We're trying to become purified. See, good qualities means that there's a lack of bad. The soul, by nature, has good qualities. So when we say that he's bad qualities, it means the good ones are covered. The good ones don't go away, they just become covered by the bad. The bad go away, and then the good come out. So that's why you say it's a natural process. If you remove the bad ones, the good ones are automatically there, just like you have gold. Gold by nature is shiny. So it's not that the shine goes away, the shine becomes covered by the tarnish. So if you, according to the rules, then you polish that gold and remove the tarnish, automatically its shininess is there. It's automatically inherent there. You don't have to put it in by some artificial means. You don't have to go out and buy some shininess for gold and then put it on the gold. The gold's already, but it becomes covered by the tarnish. So living entity becomes covered by material desire. So when we perform the process, automatically means if we're following the process the way that the process is supposed to be followed, automatically it'll happen. Because if we follow the process properly, then we're endeavoring to give up attachment and aversion and all these different things. So this way then the anarthas go, and we keep good associations, so then we start to gain good qualities from, we see there how they behave and we become inspired. Right? Then the anarthas start to go away, and when the anarthas go away, then the good qualities shine forth. But unless we are doing it with a goal to please Krishna and develop love for Krishna, then we may get rid of the anarthas and we may become very pious and have all these nice human qualities, but we won't develop love for Krishna. Therefore, simultaneously, we have to have that goal and we must perform the process of cleansing, which is sadhana bhakti. That's the thing. If some will overemphasize the sadhana and not speak enough about the goal of prema. Some will overemphasize the goal of prema and not discuss about the sadhana. But you have to have both. So the prema is your goal. That's what you're moving towards. So you always see everything that you're going in that direction. So when you're performing the sadhana, you know that's to remove the anarthas so that you can develop love for Krishna. Right? It's just like, let's say I'm out in the street and, you know, I've fallen in a ditch somewhere and we don't know what's going on, and then someone says, no, but you're a devotee of Krishna, you should serve Krishna. And then in our nice muddy clothes and that, we just run into the deity room and go up and embrace the deity. Can we call that devotional service? Right? Unless it's done in pure prema bhakti, we can't claim that. Therefore, we have to go clean ourselves, put proper clothes and all that. Then we can go in and do worship of the deity according to the system that you're supposed to worship. Right? So, in other words, we have to become knowledgeable. Therefore, it says jnana and vairag. You have to understand what is Krishna and what is the service of Krishna. And then how to become detached from the material energy. So they both go together. So someone is doing the process but not becoming purified, he's not actually following fully the process. He's following the externals of it, but he's not actually changing his mood. He's not being careful, or he's not learned enough in what he's doing. Prabhupada, when he gave in the beginning, he gave the principles. Principles are very simple. But many times devotees try to keep that simplicity but drop the principles and then just accept simple details, and they'll say, yes, I'm following the same mood as Prabhupada. Right? But they may not be. They've just replaced principles, simple principles that Prabhupada gave that are all-encompassing. And then it's a matter of expertise and practice and association, you know how to apply it in unlimited situations. But we've replaced those with some simple details. Right? Prabhupada, you go out, you preach, you benefit other people, you engage yourself in the Sankirtan mission. That is the principle. Now, if you can do book distribution and that's best. You know, that's very good. You go out there and preach and bring people in and distribute this knowledge. But if you can't, you do some service in the temple, or you do anything. You know, do some college programs, whatever it is. Then if you understand this is all part of the preaching mission, then you're preaching. So that's the essential point, is that the preaching must go on, the sankirtan, the chanting, hearing, all these things. But then when it just becomes, that is what Prabhupada's pushing, and according to your nature, you're going to engage somewhere in the sankirtan mission. So it's very simple. But now, so many years down the line, then you have the sankirtan leader hands you a stack of stickers and says, go out and do sankirtan. And that's it. There's no training in the mercy to the other living. All it is you have a quota. You got to sell 100 of these things and bring in so much bucks, and that's it. And if you're not doing, you're not surrendered to Krishna. So things are kept very simple. Simplicity is maintained. But they've changed from a principle to a detail. Right? They've changed a principle to a detail. Because now it's not necessarily being seen that how going out and collecting here is then part of the big picture. Right? So the same pressure and things that Prabhupada would give on book distribution, now they're giving on stickers. The book distribution, distribute the books. Because you've distributed the books, then some money comes in and we use that for preaching. Right? But the stickers, then that's just bringing in money so we can run the temple. Right? So the whole purpose of it is just to get the money to run the temple. Right? And why are we running the temple? So we can sell stickers. Why are we selling stickers? So we can run the temple. But where is the principle that Prabhupada's made? You know, in the Sunday feast, you charge for it because you also got to get money. So then it's changed from preaching to just collecting money. So Sankirtan means now money collection rather than just distributing books and making devotees and Harinam. So it's still simple. But we see it's transformed. And then when somebody speaks the same thing, there's no satisfaction. Because in that whole process, there isn't relationship. There's not the interaction. Bhuktisthabhushan means I'm giving knowledge. They're satisfied with that, and they are giving something in reciprocation. Right? You understand? So it can change. Right? It changes like that. So then one has to be very, very careful. That one sees, like the principle of like an education. Prabhupada says, they ask, should we teach cooking? Prabhupada says, no, that's learned by association. So then it will be taken by some, it's just thrown out. Cooking is not something that's ever taught to the kids. Because Prabhupada said, no, it's just a simple thing learned by association. No. You train the kids through association how to cook. You don't have an academic class. Because the devotees were just asking about academic classes. So they didn't understand the principle that Prabhupada said. It's just class means academics. Arts is association. So you learn it in association, but it gets thrown out. So the simplicity is kept, but the principle is lost. So we always have to be very, very careful, is that we may think we're following, but if we're following and we're not satisfied, something's wrong. Because the devotional process is so wonderful. You follow it, you just become happy. So if we're not becoming happy, then this, we're not doing something right. Right? And just like you have a recipe. You've tasted the preparation, it's very nice, it made you very happy. You follow the recipe, and at the end, it doesn't taste nice. So that means we made some mistake in following the recipe. Does that make any sense? So the whole idea is we must become conscious. Right? You find that quote?
No.
Krishnendu mentioned that he has heard many times that Prabhupada says, what? First become conscious, then become Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
Huh?
Many times.
You've heard that many times.
Yeah.
So one must become conscious. So all these different rules and regulations are the purpose to become conscious. That's what they're for. You're conscious that you ate and that your right hand is contaminated. Therefore, you don't scratch your head with your right hand. If you do that, then one will say, don't touch your head. Then they'll say, well, we don't care about all these rules. You know, don't be a smarta. But that means we're not conscious. We can't be conscious that I shouldn't touch my head with a hand sturdy. I have to be conscious of this hand until I wash it. I can't touch things. I can't do things with it. One may say, well, that's being real fanatic. No, that's called being conscious. And from that conscious, then it's easy to become Krishna conscious. What is it? You know, the Pandita Samadarshana. You know, he's seeing, you know, the elephant, the dog eater. He says he's seeing them all as living entities. It's because he's conscious. So someone who's fully conscious, they just see Krishna everywhere because he knows that Krishna is the root of everything. Right? Right.
I know when the body after he eats, he wipes his hand on his head like this and says, you know, it's just stool.
Just, if it's just stool, then you mean what, his head or
yeah,
his
hair? His hair, so wiping on it doesn't make it dirty because already it's just dirty.
So then does he bother cleaning his backside after he goes to the toilet? Because, I mean, the whole body's just stool anyway. I mean, it's just a bag of stool. Why hide it? You know, be honest. You know, I mean, be straightforward, Prabhu. You know, why do you hide the fact? You know, why do you use deodorant? Why do you hide the fact that it's a bag of stool? You know, it's just stool. Yes. Joy. If it's just stool, why does he keep it on the back of his head? Why doesn't he shave it off? Why is he wiping it on the back of his head? He's got hair on his arms also. He could just wipe it there, you know?
He also had a beard for 20 years.
Huh?
He also had a beard for 20 years.
I'll tell him to wipe it on his beard. It's even better. Keep some for later, right? Keep it in the mustache. That's the advantage of weeping walrus mustaches. You can keep something for later. It's always Okay, then the next verse.
You have mentioned this Sankirtan mission, and can hear very often as the Sankirtan leader is trying to make enthusiastic devotees by giving out the quotas. And so it is said if he's not, that particular devotee is not really making his quota, that his faith is not proper. Is it like that? Does it work?
You can, it's a technique you can try, and if you see by doing that the person comes up, then great. But if they go down and bloop, then that Sankirtan leader, who's going to take the responsibility? Someone's got to take it. You can't just say they're unsincere. The Sankirtan leader has nothing to do with it. Can he just be rough like that and then just say it's nothing to do with him? His point is, his quota is there to get people out of ignorance. The best thing, the Vedic system generally, is you just talk about the glories of the thing and enthuse them that this is such a nice thing to do, then they're going to work at their best. So when you just have a quota, generally it's easy, it's a managerial point. But then the point is since when does pure management enthuse devotional practice? Right? The two different things. So it can be used. It's a tool. Like that. Is that someone's doing and then you tell them, you know, but then the current is, we know you can do it. And then you just, you know, you enthuse them and encourage them. But along with that, is better, is at least with that, then there must be the training. What is the importance of the Sankirtan mission? What is the benefit that the people are getting? Even if nothing else, all you do have is stickers, then this money is being used in Krishna's service. And whatever money that money goes for, they get the same benefit as the devotees doing the service. Let's say they give money. From that money we buy bhoga. That bhoga we offer to Krishna. So the devotees who have, you know, taken part in, you know, buying the bhoga and preparing the bhoga, offering the bhoga to Krishna, then the person who gave the money gets the same benefit. Right? So if all that is explained, then even going out selling a few stickers then has an enthusing aspect. But if it's just, you know, you go out there and you better come back with $100 at the end of the day, or you're, you know, you have no faith in your spiritual master and your maya and your nonsense and all that, you know, it may be work once, it may work twice. Was it going to work for 25 years? You know, since when has it worked for 25 years? It doesn't. It can't. I mean, there must be training in what is Krishna consciousness. Along with it. Then you feel enthused to do it. Right? If you know the association of devotees is so wonderful, what are the benefits, and just a moment's association, and how the whole devotional process starts with that, and Rupa Goswami says you must associate with those more advanced, then what do you want to do? Right? If I say, okay, you got a quota, you better spend 1 hour with 3 sadhus today, or you have no faith in guru, and you're a nonsense, and you're a maya. I couldn't find, you know, 3 sadhus today. You weren't sincere enough, Krishna didn't send them to you. You know, it's one way. If someone is so in ignorance that they don't want to move, you can use that tactic. But ultimately, you have to know is that tactic only has its use because it's being used in Krishna's service. Otherwise, it itself is not, it has any transcendental aspect to it. Because there was no glorification of the Lord in there. You know? Like that. So it has to be balanced very nicely. Because the point is these aspects must be done. All these aspects must go on. But there must be very much the encouragement and doing of the devotional activities. Like Prabhupada, devotees were going out and selling the books. But Prabhupada was pleased. But it was also, he was not so satisfied because the devotees didn't read the books. You know? He said, you know, from what I've heard at times, is that the only main thing that he was dissatisfied about with his disciples is they didn't read his books. Right? So the point is it's not we're just selling these books. We're selling these books because we read them. These are really good. We feel benefited. We know how much they can benefit others. Therefore, we want to see them with the books. So it's a whole nother side. And that's, you know, then it enlivens. And now and again, you can use that as a tool. But if you use that every time, it won't work. Anybody who knows good management knows you can't use heavy tools all the time. Because after a while, then somebody just doesn't care. You know? If every time I tell a kid, okay, if you don't go do this, then, you know, then there's, you're going to, you know, you can't go, you know, swim at the Ganga. And I just use it every time. Then after a while, then the kid goes, you know, okay, let's see some action. You know? You know, I don't care. I don't want to go to the Ganga. Now what are you going to do? I'm not going to do the activity, and I couldn't care less that I don't go to the Ganga. You know? And so anybody who knows these things wouldn't use it all the time. So it can be used now and again to wake someone up, you know? To wake them up to the thought of, well, maybe if I did, maybe it is. Maybe I'm not surrendered enough to my spiritual master. Maybe I'm not surrendered enough to the, I do not have faith enough in the system. Therefore, that's why Krishna is not giving the ability. Then it wakes them up. But if that's the only thing you exclusively use, then there may be a problem. Because you have to, one really has to look at it. Is the reason that there's not devotees don't last on Sankirtan so long, is that because of that so many people are not sincere, or maybe our understanding of Sankirtan is not, you know, it's not Sankirtan enough. Sankirtan means the complete kirtan. You know? Nowadays, many places, if you're not, you know, selling something, and especially if it's books, you're not doing Sankirtan. You're in Maya. So maybe the vision's too narrow. Therefore, then we can't engage. Because if that was so good, then why is it the Sankirtan leader always has less people? Sankirtan means everybody's engaged. So there must be, there's something missing that they're not able to engage everybody. Right? Is when Prabhupada, I mean, I remember up to 73, is that basically you did what you were, you know, whatever was needed to be done. Whatever you like to do for Krishna, whatever needed to be done, it was done for Krishna. And if they told you to go out on Harinam, you went on Harinam. They told you to wash the pots, you washed the pots. Told you to do the deity worship, you did the deity worship. And you felt it was all part of the Sankirtan mission. Right? And then one day you find out that only those guys who go out and do book distribution, then they're doing Sankirtan, and everybody else is second rate. And the Sankirtan devotees, they get better prasad, they get this, they get that, better facilities, and everybody else is, you know, nonsense.
Why was that like that?
I'm not sure. You have to ask the devotees who were in charge at that time.
Is it still like this nowadays?
Yeah, of course. But now who established that? That is the thing. It was established by the temple presidents. The temple presidents established like that. Because they see they get more out of that. They do, but temporarily.
It's always used the correspondence to that there is an army, and in an army there are so many different departments, and those who are on the outside, on the front, who are practically fighting, they are the Sankirtan devotees, and always those soldiers, even in the army, they got the best treatment because they are actually who do the fighting, not those who are working in the back, who are cooking, who are making the weapons, who are the generals.
Yeah. No, that's there. But that's okay for those back to feel like that. But when the people who come back and they think they're the cat's meow, then they have to remember, if someone didn't cook, they don't eat. When they don't eat, I don't think they're going to go out. You take even your best Sankirtan devotee and not feed him for 3 days, and let us see him carry the 20 big books. So the thing is that can be understood as long as everybody feels that they're part of the army. But if it's they're the army and everybody else is in Maya, and then you take the next step is anybody who lives outside the temple is like totally in Maya. And the amazing thing is those who have established those things, preach those things, those temple presidents and Sankirtan leaders, they're the ones living outside the temple and saying that the managers, sannyasis, the gurus and this and that don't take care, and therefore now we have to get real and get into social development. But they can't digest their own preaching. Right? They create the soup, and then afterwards they don't like the menu. And of course, this is all being very simplistic when you get down to individual points and this and that. But the thing is everybody should feel that it's all part of the whole whatever's going on, whatever's happening and all that.
I find that most of the time the reason why this is happening because there is such a financial burden.
Yes.
So how to, is it then a good thing to use the Sankirtan mission to meet our financial needs?
Well, naturally you have to take care of your needs. But one also has to look and see what is the reason that the needs are so high. You know? What is the reason the needs are so high? That's the whole point. See, it's the temple should be maintaining itself, but the temple should be full of people who pull their own weight and who teach, who preach, set a good example, and are kind of people that people who live outside the temple would like to support. Right? They're inspired by their example. So if one finds that the temple is having people that don't fit into that category, that may be why there's such a financial burden. And if you have a community, then the community should be able to take care of itself. You know? Because when we do look at how the material nature works, you know, you don't work, you don't eat. So if they don't work, then they don't belong in the community. So whether it's a city temple or a preaching temple or a farm community, everybody in it must be pulling their weight and doing something. You know? Even if it's something very simple, but that being done, then everybody else is satisfied. So one has to see that the standard is very high. You know? Like someone wants to get married and wants all kinds of facilities, but are they doing so much service that inspires that money comes in? Or, you know, or should they go out and get it themselves? Right? They want a house, they want this, they want that, then maybe they should get it themselves. Right? Temple is not meant to provide all this and that. Temple is meant to create an environment in which one can study and learn and preach. And do all those services that back that up.
So in other words, all this, when we talk about a Sankirtan mission, that has to be looked at a very broad angle. And everybody who is in the temple is part of the Sankirtan mission.
Yes.
And everybody who are distributing the books, it is not done for financial meet our financial needs, but actually this is the way we are distributing primarily the knowledge about our philosophy.
Yes. And if there's something we can do to increase the preaching, that may need funds, so we may raise the funds for that. But the thrust should be what we're doing. Put the emphasis on what we're doing, then devotees are enthused to take part and collect the money. If we just push it, you got to collect money, who's enthusiastic for that? I mean, did anybody join, you know, give up working in the material world to collect money? Right? Right? They became a devotee because they were tired of that. Right? So now when you show them how, okay, you have the nature to collect money, you were doing it before, or you had the potential to learn it. So now that you're doing it for Krishna, and these are all the benefits that you get, the other people get, what we can do for the preaching mission. And in this way, preach it, and they understand what is going on and how nicely it is there. Then they'll be inspired to use their nature in Krishna's service, and that's Varnashram. In other words, you're going to have your leading persons in the preaching, it means in, you know, your book distribution and these kind of activities, those who are very brahminical, those who are good at organizing, and those who are great, you know, those who are into making money, you know, making profit, you know, vaishyas, and shudras with a great, you know, who are good salesmen. So you can gauge everybody, but they're all coming from a different angle. So if the vaishya and shudra aspect becomes this prominence, then you'll see it'll fall apart. When vaishya terminology and vaishya and shudra values are made the front, the Sankirtan mission starts to lose its potency. It has to be the brahminical. And then from that, you know, everybody with all other natures is going to be satisfied. Like that.
In one place, Maharaj, I saw Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur analyze the word Samkirtan as utilizing all of one's faculties together harmoniously for glorifying the Lord, utilizing all of the senses, intelligence, everything. So that's how he analyzed that word Samkirtan. And it seems, compassion has to be the overriding motivation, because it was Prabhupada's, I think, compassion that captured us. And then in acknowledging that compassion, you automatically want to go and give that same kind of compassion that inspired you to others. So if it's working like that, then that's the true spirit of Sankirtan. But otherwise, sometimes we can see somebody can do, like Prabhupada would sometimes talk about bell ringing. But we can see people who've just done prajari work in Mayapur and highly, highly elevated souls and glorified Sankirtan book distribution. But we can see sometimes, at least in the past, personalities who were big book distributors became proud. So it's always the application. So it's always, like you were saying earlier, the consciousness with which we do something. That has to be. And the motivation we have to see. What actually we have to analyze when I'm out preaching or giving out books. What is the incentive for me? What is the motivation? And I think we can't, I think that's a principle that might have been also overlooked to some degree. Because Prabhupada had that expertise to do all of these things. But many times we don't have the same purity or the same understanding or knowledge, and we think, you know, the means will justify, the end justifies the means. So we can do the change up and we can do so many things, but at the end of the day the result justifies it. But we can see clearly in retrospect this has been very damaging. You have to be careful. And it's like you said, if something's working, but if you see it's not working, then okay, I didn't apply. Somewhere along the line, I've missed the recipe or I've made a mistake. Let me carefully analyze. Go back, because I haven't got that result.
Very good. I just was thinking that, and it reminded me of something that Haripada was mentioning about in the army, then you have certain personalities of the front line and all that kind of thing. Now, on that front line, you're going to have many different kinds of people. You're going to have those people that are out there only because they're supposed to be out there, they've been drafted, and, you know, if they weren't there, they'd end up in jail, and nobody cares for them much. In the army themselves, they call them cannon fodder. Just means that they're filled until they can figure out what to do, run up that hill, and capture that bunker, and then they all get killed, and they go, okay, we can't go up that side. Okay, you take your guys and go around that side. Oh, they got killed. Okay, call in the airplanes and bomb it. They couldn't care less. Guys, live or die. So one has to be very careful about that. Is that in the Vedic thing is there was very much care for everybody was there. They were protected by the Kshatriya, just like the charioteer is a Shudra, but he's protected by the Kshatriya who's driving. Like that, it's his business to protect. So if we want to be a leader and manager, we have to protect those underneath. So then we see that they may last for a short amount of time. Also, most people are only in the armed forces for, a year and a half, 2 years, or, some places maybe three, whatever it is. And then they're out. So then if that's geared for that, we know there'll be a turnover. Then we know, okay, someone will push them how much they can for as long as they can, and then after that we'll see that they get nicely situated in a service that they actually feel comfortable with. But if it's as soon as they can't do Sankirtan, oh, they're not sincere, then we don't care if they bloop or go here or there. Then it's not very good to use the army analogy, because the person who's saying it actually doesn't know what he's talking about, because armies don't work like that anyway. Then if you talk about the special crack troops, those special crack troops were people that wanted to be in there. They weren't drafted. These are people who wanted to be. There's no one in, the Marines or the SAS or the Green Berets or the Moshad or any of your special crack troops that just were drafted. They just saw them on the street and said, hey. No. They went through rigorous training to get there. So what rigorous training did that Sankirtan leader give? Some give, many don't. So that means rigorous training means he wanted his book distributor to know what was in the book. So is that Sankirtan leader seeing that those devotees are seriously reading? Up to now, I've heard of one temple out of 350 we have in the world that emphasized that their book distributors had to read 2 hours a day. No ifs, no ands, no buts. And as far as temples goes, they're always generally one of the top in the world. But it's the only one I've heard of. Only one. They say you have to read 2 hours before you go out on Sankirtan. And they enforce it. And the results went up. They did less Sankirtan and more reading, and they got more results in that less time than before when they weren't reading. But I've only heard of one. So that is crack troops, because that temple, the whole temple is geared towards that. So that's crack troops. Yes.
They found also, Marge, with your point about training is very good, because vigorous training, they found proportionately any crack unit that had like really intensive training, and some of them, like SAS or Green Berets or Salu Scouts would be 2 years basic, was really heavy, and then go on to other specialized things. But proportionately, their casualties are virtually minimal compared to your rank and file cannon fodder that get a 6 weeks basic. So they found that if the men are super well trained, there's practically no casualties. It's amazing. But they will go into the most dangerous situation, the most high risk situation, and come out with the least casualties because of the training.
Yeah.
And another thing is, when the papacy had to deal with the whole Protestant onslaught, that's when they came up with the Jesuits, who were like the Pope's crack troops for Catholicism. They had a 15-year basic training. By the time they went out, they were so staunch. If you read about any of their preaching, whether it was the samurai in Japan and they were all getting beheaded, or the Red Indians in America, they were considered by the people they preached to so fearless that the people were amazed. They figured this whole thing must have something to it, because look at these people. They just came in, we just chopped off all their heads, and they're back again. So, I mean, they've got to have something.
They got a great tailor, right? Sewed their heads back on.
So this is the point, that the training is actually the real gist of the matter. And if you care about people, you'll train them. If you don't, you'll just throw them out on the streets with no preparation at all.
But then this principle of training should be applied to all the devotees.
Oh yeah, everything. It's everything. Everything needs training. Means Prabhupada's ISKCON was for training Brahmins. Because all the others, then they'll naturally be happy living outside, like that. And even a lot of Brahmins will live outside. But the temples were specifically for Brahmins, to train Brahmins, because Brahminical training is given to everybody. We just read 30 points, and that is there. And then the next verse is, then he talks about the dvijas. So that was like everybody in human society must have those qualities. Then we'll go on to, you know, more fine qualities here, you know, like that. And here he's talking about following any religion, anything, just following. In the next verse, then he doesn't talk like that. Then he says, here, text 13, those who have been reformed by the Garbhodan ceremony and other prescribed reformatory methods, perform with Vedic mantras and without interruption, and who have been approved by Lord Brahma, are dvijas, or twice born. Such brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, purified by their family traditions and by their behavior, should worship the Lord, study the Vedas, and give in charity. In this system, they should follow the principles of the four ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So it's interesting here, because here he's saying that all three follow all four of these. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they follow Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Well, in the Asuric Varnashram, it doesn't work like that. Like that. The Vaishyas only follow Brahmachari and Grihastha. Then the Kshatriyas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and the Brahmins in all four. Like that. But in the Daiva, then all four are followed by those three Varnas. So this is in the saying, it's saying here that they'll follow this. So already they've established that, and they've said Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, they've given the nine processes, that this is the basis. Then, after that, it said, then, from those who are then followed by purificatory rites, they're born, they're brought up, then they're trained in the Vedas, they worship the Lord, and all this, they will then follow all these ashrams. Right? So the whole thing he's talking about, Varna and Ashram, that it's going to happen like that. But the training is there. So there's more training. The other one, there must be training. Now there's more training. Purport. After giving a general list of 30 qualifications for one's behavior, Narad Muni now describes the principles of the four varnas and four ashramas. A human being must be trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities, otherwise he is not even a human being. Probably doesn't pull any punches, does he? Then, among such qualified persons, the varnashram process should be introduced. In the Varnashram system, the first ceremony for purification is Garbhodan, which is performed with mantras at the time of sex for propagating a good child. One who uses sex life not for sensual pleasure, but only to beget children according to the reformatory method, is also accepted as a brahmachari. One should not waste semen on sensual pleasure, violating the principles of Vedic life. Restraint wouldn't be very popular in New Age circles. Restraint in sex is possible, however, only when the populace is trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities. Ah, so that's the thing. you're not trained in those 30 qualities, then you're not a human, so therefore you can't maintain it. So therefore it's very natural not to follow, it means not to follow celibacy. But if you're trained in those 30, then it's very natural to follow. Otherwise, it is not possible. Even if one is born in the family of dvijas, or twice born, if they have not followed the reformatory processes, he is called a dvija bandhu, not one of the twice born, but a friend of the twice born. The whole purpose of this system is to create good population. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, when women are polluted, the populace is Varnashankara. And when the Varnashankara population increases, the situation of the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, all the Vedic literatures strongly warn against creating Varnashankara population. When there is Varnashankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and other similar bodies.
This purpose, Maharaj, it seems that unless we really make it an educational institution, our ISKCON movement, we won't be able to make as human beings, because in the purpose, Prabhupada says that those who are trained on those qualities, they naturally follow whatever is needed to be a human being.
Mm.
So it is not that we make a vow and then automatically we will be able to do that.
Yeah.
Unless we are educated, we won't be able to do that. So that's a natural path, that if we don't educate our people, then we won't be able to do that what Prabhupada wanted us to do.
Yeah. Mm, that's a very good point. Yeah, Prabhupada always talks about it as an educational institution. Because that's what book distribution is you're going out and you're giving the books of knowledge or the authority by which people can be educated. And then the idea is that they read them, then they'll come and start associating with devotees, then they'll be brought in more, then they'll be taught devotional service, and they'll be able to perform devotional service in their own home. Or if it's favorable, they'll live in the temple. And in this way, then they'll just be training. It just keeps going. The first thing is you go out and distribute the books, and then you get them onto the boat. And then once they're on the boat, you have to train them. So it's so important for the books to go out, because this movement is being left in the hands of people who have not come from necessarily great glorious backgrounds. So how they'll understand the philosophy, how they'll propagate the philosophy, they may be expert or may not. So unless the books go out so that they're there and there's millions of them everywhere and everybody's got one of them in the house, then when someone is, you know, very serious, they can go right to source and get the actual conclusions. So unless the books have gone out, how will that happen? Right? But the point is after that, then there is the training. Because we also see then later, then Prabhupada says, okay, we've done enough of this, we've made enough devotees, we've distributed enough books. Now let's boil the milk, let us start training them. It doesn't mean that those don't go on, but we don't have to put 100% 100% that everything goes into that at the expense of training devotees. Point was is we've gotten devotees, they're serious, they've proven themselves that they can dedicate themselves, now let's train them nicely. But devotees just kept going for it, because you know it makes better copy in the morning after Mangal Arti. You know, when you can say, you know, this person distributed this much books and that books, and, or made this many devotees, and, you know, that's it. So the whole thing is we have to value the training. And you see devotees want it. Otherwise, why would there be so many educational systems devotees are establishing, you know? You know, the VAHE, the VTE, and there's so many. You know, was it in South Africa? You got the Bhaktivedanta College, like that, and so many places, and so many devotees are very, very interested. You know? Yes.
The key thing with the books, too, is intelligent people, when they read the books, they want to come and see what's described in the books, and the hope to find it going on in the temple.
Yeah, yeah.
And when what goes on in the temples doesn't match what's in the books, there are problems, because even in the days in Italy where they had the big radio station, they would have call-ins from interested people, and they were obviously reading Bhagavatam and so many things, and asking such amazing questions that many times they said, well, we'll have to get back to you on that one, because they were deep philosophical questions. So I think in a way, with all the books out there, is another kind of counterbalance where we're forced to come up to the mark, because when people more and more know what the standards are, they expect that of us. They expect, well, you are Prabhupada's people, you should, you amongst all people should be following. So what we do in our temples then has to match what Prabhupada has written in his books.
Yeah.
And I think this is another mark for us to come up to. It's like it's a healthy challenge.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good challenge.
What is the service that we find claiming others as the meaning of the art platform?
Bringing them down to your platform. Untraining them down to your platform. Yeah. What time is it now?
5:02.
Okay, so we should stop here as it gets late. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.